HFC, Household Finance Corporation, presents The Whistler.
I'm the Whistler, and I know many things, for I walk by night. I know many strange tales hidden in the hearts of men and women who have stepped into the shadows. Yes, I know the nameless terrors of which they dare not speak.
Yes, it's time again for The Whistler, brought to you by the 423 branch offices of Household Finance Corporation throughout the United States and Canada. You know, friends, at some time or other, almost everybody is faced with a money problem. Perhaps many of you listening right now need some extra cash to meet an emergency, to pay overdue bills, or for any worthwhile purpose. Well, no matter who you are, what your job, or where you live, HFC, Household Finance Corporation, can provide you with the money you need, when you need it. And now, The Whistler's strange story, The Professor and the Fox.
John Strickland had finished his lunch and was on his way out of the barrister's club when Latimer sidled up to him at the door and steered him into the bar for a drink. John was curious, of course. Latimer never did anything without good reason, least of all invite his arch rival to join him over a bottle of 10-year-old bourbon. And as they sat there smiling over their glasses, he wondered what was on Latimer's mind. Finally, when Latimer was good and ready, he found out.
Well, if you must know, Strickland, it's a client of yours, Mrs. Fremont.
Oh?
Gilt edge, 14 carat, charming. A great lady of the old school. How long have you managed her estate, Strickland? 10 years? 15?
Long enough. Why?
Been pretty profitable, too, hasn't it? In one way or another.
Suppose we consider that my affair, huh?
Of course, of course. The point is, I had a long talk with Mrs. Fremont this morning.
You what? See here, Latimer, what right have you...
Easy, old boy, easy. It was all quite ethical. It had to do with that tragic fire out on her summer estate. You'll recall, of course, that the wife of the caretaker, Mrs. Benson, was killed.
Killed? Well, what are you talking about? She wasn't touched by the fire. The excitement was too much for her. She had a bad
that's
heart.
That's not quite the way my client understands it.
Your client?
Mr. Benson, the poor woman's husband. I'm afraid he's won me over. It was a clear case of negligence, Strickland.
On what basis?
A faulty fire extinguisher. The poor woman tried to put out the fire. The fumes overcame
her. Don't be ridiculous. I could blow that sky high in 5 minutes with one technical witness, and you know it.
You'd better find him.
I've never known you to play around with nuisance suits before, Latimer. Why are you doing
it? The Fox. That's what they call you, isn't it, Strickland? The Fox. I don't know. Maybe I just wonder how you'd look running away with your tail between your legs.
You picked a poor case for that.
I think it's a good one. So do you. That's why you're scared, isn't it?
Makes you think I'm scared.
Just a hunch. Your cigarette.
Huh?
Turn it around. The cork end goes in the mouth. So long, Strickland. See you in court.
Oh, Mr. Strickland.
Yes, what is it, Miss Graham?
There's a man waiting to see you. He's been here for an hour. Mr. Benson.
Benson?
Yes. I'll tell him you're too busy.
No, wait. I'll see him myself. Well, Mr. Benson.
Oh.
I'm John Strickland.
Yeah, I know. Mr. Strickland, I come to tell you...
You needn't go into that. I've just talked to your lawyer. I hope you realize, Mr. Benson, that this whole business is ridiculous. I can have it thrown out of court in 10 minutes.
Well, that's why I come to see you, Mr. Strickland. I don't like it either.
What?
Yeah, I got nothing against Mrs. Fremont. Why should I want to sue her for $50,000? It
well,
ain't right.
That's a very sensible attitude.
This here Latimer, he grabbed me right after it happened, and before I knew it, I signed a complaint.
Yeah?
Now, I thought that if you and me could maybe make a little deal here without going to court about it.
Of course, Mr. Benson. Why don't you sit down here, huh?
But Mrs. Fremont, Fremont, I'm sure Mr. Strickland can see you in just a moment.
I'll only be a minute. I'm sure he won't mind.
Well, Martha, this is unexpected.
Of course, John, and I'm so sorry to interrupt. But I'm a little pressed for time this morning, and this did seem important.
Not at all.
Now, Mr. Benson...
Look, Mrs. Fremont, I can explain everything. I was just coming here to tell Mrs.
Yes, yes, I'm sure it won't be necessary, Mr. Benson. If you'll be good enough, I'd like to speak to Mr. Strickland alone.
Yes, ma'am. Bye, Mr. Strickland.
Yeah. I wish you hadn't done that, Martha.
Oh?
Benson came here to drop his suit.
I'm quite aware of that, John. He came to me first.
But why did you...
I don't intend to let him drop it, you see.
What?
He treated me unjustly, John. He made statements I consider very damaging.
But he wants to retract all that.
I've thought it over very carefully and decided that the proper place to see justice done is in the courtroom.
Oh, good Lord, Martha.
I'm sorry, John. I've made my decision. Now, that brings me to the other point.
I see.
You're aware, of course, that I've been under considerable pressure to turn my affairs over to another firm.
I wasn't aware of that, Martha.
Nevertheless, it's true. I've argued against it, of course, told them I had complete faith in you, that you'd handled my affairs fairly capably for some years now. They referred to the tax case, the $30,000.
Good Lord, Martha, I didn't have a leg to stand on.
Perhaps let's not discuss it now, John. The point is, I've agreed that in the event you don't handle this Benson matter successfully, I'll turn the management of my estate over to Nichols and Robertson's. Good day, John.
A nuisance case, John. A nuisance case that has suddenly become more than a nuisance. For a full minute after Mrs. Fremont leaves, you stand there bewildered, unable to understand how it could happen now after 15 years. It had seemed so simple in the beginning, hadn't it, John? So easy to take advantage of your position to divert funds now and then to your personal use as a temporary measure. But it wasn't temporary after all. Now, at the end of 15 years, the shortage in Mrs. Fremont's accounts will run somewhere around $80,000. And there's only one way to stop it now. One way to prevent Nichols and Robertson from finding the shortage if you lose control. Your hand is shaking as you pick up the phone and dial a familiar number.
Professor Greer, please.
Oh, I'm sorry, Professor Greer's left for the day.
Well, could you get a message to him, please? This is John Strickland. Would you tell him I need him as a technical witness right away?
I see. Is it urgent?
Extremely urgent. I must see Professor Greer tonight.
You have just heard the prologue of The Professor and the Fox, another strange tale by The Whistler, brought to you by Household Finance Corporation. There comes a time in everyone's life. Familiar words, aren't they? Yes, friends, and there comes a time in almost everyone's life when extra money is needed. Money to meet a sudden emergency, money to pay overdue bills, doctor or dentist bills, unusual seasonal expenses, and there's always the tax bill. Well, I would like to suggest a simple solution to your money problems. HFC, Household Finance Corporation. Household Finance and its 423 branch offices, there's one conveniently located near your home, is in the business of providing the extra money you need when you need it. At Household Finance, you may borrow the money you need and select the payment plan that suits you best. Service at Household is prompt and courteous. And remember,
HFC means Household Finance Corporation. Money when you need it.
And now, back to The Whistler.
Yes, John, it began as a nuisance case, as a suit against your client, Mrs. Fremont, for $50,000, based on the ridiculous charge that a faulty fire extinguisher was responsible for the death of the caretaker's wife. But it's more than that now. If you lose it, John, if the control of Mrs. Fremont's fortune passes into other hands, you lose everything. Your career, your reputation, your freedom. And everything will depend on the testimony of timid, quiet little Professor Greer. A trifle nervous now as he takes a cigar from the silver humidor you offer him.
Put a couple in your pocket, Professor.
Thank you.
Sorry to get you out at this hour, but it's terribly important.
Oh, well, of course.
It's one of my clients, Mrs. Fremont. I'll probably have to put you on the stand to keep her from being victimized out of $50,000.
Victimized?
Yes. It all hinges on this, Professor. What's in the fire extinguisher that's called Quencho?
We keep one in the laboratory. It's principally carbon tetrachloride.
Could it kill anyone?
No, that's impossible.
It couldn't give off carbon monoxide gas, for instance?
Oh, no, of course not. It's perfectly safe.
I see. And the plaintiff is claiming a woman died of asphyxiation, inhaling the fumes of this extinguisher.
Oh, well, could it have happened in any other way?
No. What makes it more ridiculous, there was a window open in the basement of the house where it happened.
Oh, then asphyxiation is out of the question. The case ought to be thrown out of court immediately.
Well, with your testimony, I'm sure it will be. We're in court next Monday, Professor. 10 in the morning?
All right, Mr. Strickland. I'll be there.
There's nothing you can do now but wait until Monday, is there, John? Nothing to do but prepare your brief based on little Professor Greer's testimony. Yes, you'll only produce one witness, but you're sure he'll be enough. On Monday morning, the trial opens. Latimer brings his first witness to the stand, an undertaker named Albert Morgan.
Now, Mr. Morgan, you were the mortician in charge. Did you notice anything unusual about the body of Mrs. Benson?
Yes, I did. It was my impression that Mrs. Benson died of asphyxiation.
Objection! Your Honor, the witness is an undertaker. He's not competent to make statements regarding the cause of death. That's a matter for a physician.
Sustained. Strike it from the record, clerk.
May I congratulate counsel on the wisdom of his suggestion? When I'm finished with Mr. Morgan, I intend to produce a physician. A man, I might add, of unquestioned competence.
Mr. Strickland, you don't suppose...
Forget it. I'll take care of the doctor. Dr. Hayden, you have just testified that you knew the deceased intimately.
Yes, I was her personal physician.
And as such, you were, of course, aware she had a weak heart.
I was.
And yet you have made the statement that it is your professional opinion she died of asphyxiation.
Right. The symptoms seemed to indicate carbon monoxide.
Seemed to indicate.
Stronger than that. I'd gamble on it.
Yes, well, we're not gambling here, Doctor. We're after facts. Could any other form of death produce similar symptoms?
Well... It's possible, but...
And yet not... you just testified that Mrs. Benson unquestionably died of carbon monoxide poisoning.
I said that was my professional opinion.
Yeah, but it is still only an opinion. It's not a certainty.
That's right. It's an opinion.
That's all, Doctor. Thank you. Now, Professor... Will you tell the court about this chemical in the Quencho extinguisher, this carbon tetrachloride? Could this chemical have produced carbon monoxide gas when it came in contact with flame?
Oh, no. Such a reaction is chemically impossible. Though I am completely convinced she died from carbon monoxide, it must have been something other than Quencho that caused it.
Thank you, Professor.
In the house, probably in the basement where the body was found.
That's all, Professor.
Although many people die of carbon monoxide, this is a very unusual case in view of the open window, free access of fresh air.
That's all, Professor.
Just a moment, Your Honor. I'd like to cross-examine.
Your witness.
Now, Professor, you say something else might have caused carbon monoxide poisoning?
Oh, many things can cause it. As I say, this is a puzzling case. But if I could examine the premises, particularly where the body was found, I might be able to discover how it happened.
Object! If counsel for the plaintiff hasn't prepared his case before trial, he can't try the patience of this court with this kind of impromptu investigation.
That's a matter for the court to decide, Mr. Strickland. You say you'd be willing to visit the premises, Professor?
Why, of course, Your Honor.
This trial is in recess until tomorrow.
Exactly what do you think you're doing, Professor?
Why, getting to the bottom of the matter.
Oh, you are?
Yes, sooner or later I think I'll find the chemical explanation to the strange problem.
Well, I don't happen to share your scientific zeal, Professor. It's against my interest to show them anything on the Fremont premises that could have caused that woman's death.
But in the interest of justice...
All right, all right. You've got me over a barrel, Professor. What's your price?
My price?
Call it your fee, if you prefer. What about 5,000?
You mean... you're trying to bribe me?
All right. 10,000.
Well, I'm afraid you don't understand, Mrs. Strickland. I couldn't accept any amount if it means concealing the truth.
All right. Just do me one favor, will you?
Why, of course.
Go on out and make your investigation, but tell me what you find first before you tell anyone else. Will you do that?
Why, certainly, Mr. Strickland. I'll call you the minute I get back.
It's a frightening thing, isn't it, John, to discover such an honest man. A man without a price. And you've not only discovered him, you can't get rid of him. In spite of all your efforts to head him off, little Professor Greer is bent on finding out exactly what killed Mrs. Benson, and then going on that stand in the morning and telling the jury about it. Your fear of the little man grows as you wait, with each maddening moment bringing you closer to exposure. Then, shortly after 6 o'clock, the phone rings.
Yes?
It's Professor Greer, Mr. Strickland.
Yes.
I'm sure everyone will be pleased. I've just written up a report on exactly what happened out there.
I see. Well, would you say that it's favorable to my client, Professor?
Oh, my report won't help your client, I'm afraid. But then I'm sure even Mrs. Fremont would be happy to know the true facts.
Yes, of course. Have you discussed them with anyone else?
Oh, certainly not. I gave you my word, Mr. Strickland.
When can I go over this report with you?
I'll come over right away, Mr. Strickland. 10 minutes. Now, you see, the poor woman's body was found close to an air conditioner.
But there's certainly nothing dangerous about that.
And not ordinarily, Mr. Strickland. But it uses a gas, the fluorochloromethane. The heat from the fire caused this gas to expand, and the pressure increased until it burst the metal of the air conditioner.
Well, how could that cause carbon monoxide poisoning? There was a window
it's
open.
It's that window that's thrown us all off. You see, the fluorochloromethane is, oddly enough, a gas that needs air to become poisonous.
What? Are you trying to tell me that fresh air can kill a person?
Under the circumstances, yes. You see, this gas breaks down in the present.
Professor, I don't understand any of this.
Well, perhaps I'm not explaining it clearly enough, Mr. Strickland. Well, let me see. Let me put it another way. As the fire grew in intensity and the flames burned closer to the air...
Buddy doesn't have to explain again, does he, John? It's all too clear now. The nuisance suit is lost. Mrs. Fremont will turn her affairs over to Nichols and Robertson. And you know what that means. Your embezzlement exposed. Disgrace. The end of everything you've worked for. This Professor Greer, John, this threadbare, prattling, weasened-up nobody is going to ruin you unless you stop him now.
Further, Mr. Strickland, you see, the air from that window actually helped kill Mrs. Benson. That open window became a lethal...
Professor, I'm sorry. Perhaps it's because I'm tired. I don't know, but none of this makes any sense to me at all.
Well, perhaps if you read my report yourself... It's in my briefcase out in the car. If you think it'll help, Mr. Strickland, I'll run out.
No, I'm sure it won't. Professor, would it be asking too much of you to drive out there with me again? Show me what happened right on the scene.
You mean tonight?
Right now, yes.
But of course, yes, I'll be glad to go, Mr. Strickland.
Fine. Could we take your car? Mine's in the repair shop.
Oh, mine's right outside, Mr. Strickland.
Well, I'll get my hat. I appreciate this, Professor. I do want to get this thing cleared up, one way or the other.
Oh,
My, I hate driving these mountain roads at night.
Yes, so do I. There's a side road that cuts in here somewhere, Professor. Might save us some climbing.
Oh, really? I didn't notice it driving back and forth today.
If you got a flashlight handy, we'll check the next road sign.
Oh, the flashlight there in the glove compartment.
Oh. Yes, this'll do fine. All right, Professor, pull up for a minute.
But I don't see any sign, Mr. Strickland. Are you sure?
Stop the car. It's right over there. I'll throw the light on it for you.
I don't see a thing. I think we'd better just stay right...
You look down at him, slumped over the wheel. Reach for the briefcase in the back seat. Get out of the car and walk around to the other side. You turn the wheel towards the edge of the cliff. Leap back as the little car begins to roll forward. An hour later, you let yourself into your apartment, pull down the shades, and then turn to Professor Greer's locked briefcase lying on your desk. It'll only take a minute now to open it and destroy the reports, John. And once that's done, the rest will be easy. Then...
Yes?
It's McLeod, John. Headquarters.
Headquarters.
You stop for a minute, frozen, and then shove the professor's briefcase under the desk. Try to compose yourself as you walk to the door.
Well, hello, Lieutenant.
I'm glad you're still up, John. Thought I might have to hoist you out of bed.
Oh, what is it?
Well, I'm always thinking about my pals, you know. I thought you'd appreciate a little favor, John, with that damaged suit on your hands.
Favor?
Mm-hmm. About Benson.
What about Benson?
Well, your worries are over, John. You can forget the damage case. We finally broke him down.
Broke him down?
Aye. His wife didn't die by accident out at the Fremont place. Benson murdered her.
What?
Insurance.
Good Lord.
He was the last guy in the world to want to sue the old lady, but Latimer moved too fast for him. Had him thinking it would be a cinch 50 grand. Oh, and another thing.
What's that?
He didn't stop with his wife.
You mean there was someone else?
Yeah. Just a few minutes ago, while he was at it, Benson also confessed to the murder of Professor Greer.
Professor Greer? Why, I don't understand.
Oh, it's very simple. You see, the professor was out at the Fremont place all afternoon, snooping around, writing reports. Well, Benson says he was sure the professor found the answer, that he was ready to put the finger on him. So...
He told you all this?
Well, we're pretty good at convincing a guy when we have to be.
Yes. Well, excuse me a moment. I'd like it.
Sure, John, sure.
Your knees are weak as you stumble out of the room to the kitchen, hoping McLeod will write it off as shock at the news of Professor Greer's death. It's a puzzle, isn't it, John? They might be playing cat and mouse with you. Why would Benson confess to a murder that you yourself committed not 3 hours ago, John? Why? The report, McLeod said. Benson knew there was something incriminating in that report. Yes, by the time you come back into the room, you know that before you make another move, you've got to get into that briefcase and find out Professor Greer's report. It's still where you left it, leaning against your desk when you returned to McLeod.
Oh, sorry you won't join me, McLeod.
No, not on duty, thanks. I thought you might ride over to headquarters with me and get the story from Benson himself.
Not tonight, I'm afraid. Professor Greer... I have no idea how hard this is.
Oh, yes, I know. He did a lot of technical work for you, didn't he?
I feel guilty, in a way. He was working for
me. Yeah, that's right.
You going down there now?
Mm-hmm. Oh, and I better get a move on, too. Are you sure you won't go with me now?
Oh, I couldn't, McLeod.
Oh, of course, I understand. Well, at least you can forget about the damage suit.
Well, I appreciate your coming,
McLeod. Oh, forget it.
Good night.
Good night.
Briefcase.
Mr.
The Whistler will return in just a moment with a strange ending to tonight's story. Now we'd like to introduce a gentleman standing by in your community to speak on behalf of your own household finance representative. Back to The Whistler.
Yes, John, it's unbelievable, isn't it? A grim kind of joke. Benson has just confessed to the murder of Professor Greer, a man you killed not 3 hours ago. And as you fumble frantically with the lock on the professor's briefcase, you know that somewhere in the report inside there's bound to be an answer. You wonder what's going on down at police headquarters now. Whether they suspect the truth. Whether this is all a plot to crack you. What Benson down at police headquarters means by confessing to 2 murders.
I already told you. Why do you have to keep asking me again and again?
We've only started, Benson. Now, you say your wife died of asphyxiation from that broken air conditioner. How did you get her down to the basement?
Sleeping pills. She was out.
All right.
Carried...
So you thought you'd covered with the fire. Then the professor got
wet. Well, he knew the answer. I saw him snooping around, writing things in a book. By then, I was crazy, ready to do anything.
You're still crazy. How could you have killed Professor Greer when he only died a couple of hours ago, while you were right here in custody?
Well, his car went off the road, didn't it?
Yeah.
You seen the car?
Not yet. Highway Patrol just called it in.
Well, you'll figure it out when you see the car. I told you, I used to be a demolition man, Sergeant. There was a reason that car went off the road.
And what was that?
Well, he must have fiddled with that briefcase. I rigged a bomb in it. Anyone who pulled the cover open would have been blown to bits.
Let that whistle be your invitation to listen to the Household Finance Corporation program, The Whistler, each week over these stations. This is Ken Niles speaking for HFC and reminding you, never borrow unless you must. But if you have to borrow, do it the right way at HFC, Household Finance Corporation. Featured in tonight's story were John McIntyre and Howard McNear. The Whistler was produced by George W. Allen, with story by Sidney Renthal, music by Wilbur Hatch, and was transmitted to our troops overseas by the Armed Forces Radio Service. The Whistler is heard in Canada over the facilities of the Dominion Network of the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.